This is File 68. This is Jean McMillan, and I am interviewing Catherine Schaefer-Reed. She's going to talk about the Salisbury Ambulance Service and also the Holly Williams House. Today's date is December 2nd, 2016, and we'll start with the genealogical information.
2013.
Thank you. What do I know?
You're only 3 years ahead of yourself.
That's okay. I'll get there eventually. What is your full name?
Catherine Schaefer-Reed.
And what's your nickname?
Khaki.
You're right. Birth date, please?
12-20-58.
And your birthplace?
Stamford, Connecticut.
And your parents' names?
Judith Snyder and Morgan Schaefer.
How do you spell a Snyder?
S-N-Y-D-E-R.
And the Schaefer?
S-C-H-A-F-E-R.
One F. Mm-hmm. And you said that you have a sister?
Yes.
Okay, and her name is?
Elizabeth Schaefer Burdick, nickname of Betsy. So she was pretty much known as that.
Okay, and your educational background?
I graduated college with a B.S. in education, and then did take a few classes after graduating with my bachelor.
And you also went to Salisbury Central School.
I went to Salisbury Central School, and I went to Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
Oh, that's important.
I went to Southern Connecticut State College, so kept it in the state.
All right. Now, I just learned that you know how the ambulance service started. Would you tell me that, please?
In doing research for the 40th anniversary of the ambulance, I found out that there was a bad car accident in town, and people were upset because there wasn't an ambulance in the town. The ambulance had to come from Sharon. So from what I understood is that there was a group of businessmen that gathered at the White Hart and decided to form the ambulance and donate money for the ambulance.
And do you know the names of some of these men that initiated it?
I don't know all of them. I mean, I know there's a plaque on the ambulance garage that says the founding all the founding members, but I don't think all of those were the ones there.
Okay.
I believe John Harney had something to do with it. Reese Harris had overheard, from what I hear, overheard the conversation and said that he had a building that the ambulance could use. And I'm not sure of who else, and I wouldn't want to.
We've got a couple of good names.
Misguide people.
Got a couple of
good
names.
Exactly who was in that group.
Who owned the garage where the ambulance is now? Was that something that John Harney?
I believe Reese Harris.
Reese Harris owned it.
And then gave it to the ambulance garage down the way. I don't think that happened right away.
It probably came later.
Yeah.
What year did the ambulance service start?
1970.
I was going to say it's on the back of his shirt.
1971. Thank you. Khaki, how did you get involved with the ambulance?
I got involved because there was a letter to the editor. They were looking for drivers of the ambulance. I lived on Library Street, which is around the corner from the ambulance, and my daughter was going to college. So I was looking for something to do besides my work. Mm-hmm. Something to get out and meet other people or be social, because I know that I could very easily stay home and lock myself up.
Yeah, me too.
And went up and talked to them and learned how to drive the ambulance, and then it was suggested that I take the EMT class to see what they do in the back of the ambulance.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I passed the EMT class and got a card, and they threw me in the back and said, here, you can help with patient care now.
Wonderful.
And I go back and forth between the front and the back wherever I need. And
just have you done all of the advanced training, or have you put a limit on how much training you really want?
I have not done all the advanced. There's another step that I could do, but the ambulance doesn't really have that. It's now called AEMT, where you can do IVs, and
but you
don't have that service that we provide for Salisbury, mm-hmm. and the state keeps talking about getting rid of it, so I haven't done that. I do go to different conferences and do education just to hear different things that might help me on ambulance calls and keep up skills that way and actually participate in another organization and do a conference for EMTs in the area to help with education and some... They're starting to require CMEs for EMTs.
What's a CME?
Which is Certified Medical Education.
Okay.
And it's credits that you can get.
All right.
So some... I know New York State requires EMTs when they research to have so many of those. Connecticut hasn't required it yet.
That they will, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Oh, everybody follows everybody else.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Becky's also the assistant chief.
Well, I was getting to that. That was my next question. And her title is?
I'm assistant chief
and
of service.
What do you do as assistant chief, other than back up Jackie Rice? You said that you ran forms.
What I do is mostly review the run forms.
What are
those
run
forms? We have to do a run form on every call that we do, which is pretty much reporting what we saw when we got to a scene medically and what we did with the patient. We have to do vitals, so you're recording the vitals.
What do you mean by vitals?
Their blood pressure, their pulse, their respiration, what their skin, the skin color or texture, that tells you a lot about what might be going on medically with them. So we leave that with the hospital, and then that's part of the patient record. So the hospital, we do give an oral report when we get there, but they also have
the paperwork
form of what we did, what the care was taken. So I review those to make sure people have documented what is needed, and if things are left off, either ask them to add to it or kind of remind the crew or the whole squad what else legally we probably should have in there just to cover us down the road. Because
the paperwork is important.
Unfortunately, nowadays, it's very important.
Yeah.
And with people going so Sue crazy, we need to make sure we have things documented, because the theory in the EMS world is you didn't write it down, you didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So even if you say, I always do this.
But still, you'll have to have the paper
trail. Every single call we do it, if we don't have it on the paper, then it's determined that we didn't do it.
So you do a lot of paper shuffling.
I do paper shuffling.
All right. Yes. Do you do any training, per se, or is that not your purview?
I have done some training, and actually when new EMTs come on, I personally feel it's obligated to go on some of the calls and assist some of the new people with patients and patient care.
Okay.
And I help with the driver training. And so I feel like part of my role is support
the squad in
whatever capacity. And if it's to help with personal training or group trainings, I mean, I would suggest different trainings or work with the first aid chief, which right now is Pat.
Yes.
And things. And one of the things that I came up with is doing like the street drugs, and got a hold of Connecticut State officer.
How to, or to prevent?
Or what we would see. What are things that we should be looking for when we arrive on a scene? To protect ourselves, to figure out that the reason why this person is sick is because of drugs, not because they have the flu. And what other symptoms that might happen, because unfortunately that's occurring.
Oh, yes.
Bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
What day are you on call?
My on-call day switches between a Tuesday and a Thursday because my work schedule changes. I'm not always on the schedule as much as I'd like to be because my work requires...
I
has the opportunity of calling me in at any time.
And what is your day job?
My paid day job is a 911 dispatcher.
And you work in Torrington, don't
I you? I work in Torrington, yes. We cover 20 towns, which is definitely this whole northwest corner.
Yes.
So I get to talk to my squad members and other squads and help them out in a different capacity.
Do you work with the same people if you're on call Thursdays? And then different people when you're on call Tuesdays for the ambulance? Or is it the same people?
One of the people is the same one.
And you work
and she
with
does Fern Brazy.
Fern Brazy
covers Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when I'm filling in for an open shift, mm-hmm. because unfortunately we don't have enough people who have signed up for all the available time, the 24 hours, then I would be working with another person.
But you know them all at this point.
Right.
Yep. How long have you been working with the ambulance?
I've been with the ambulance for 14 years.
Okay.
EMT, I think 13 of them.
And I want to ask, what do you get out, personally, what do you get out of working with the ambulance service?
I get out the self-satisfaction of helping others and others in the community at a time that is probably their lowest time.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people that I've gone on calls with when I know them.
Makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference to them, but it also is a another self-satisfaction to walk in and they're smiling at you or mm-hmm. holding your hand or mm-hmm. giving you a hug because they know you and
yeah.
I'm walking in. And if I can calm them down just by walking in the door, mm-hmm. then that's...
And Pat Barton sings to them, which I think
right.
is lovely.
I don't sing to them.
Oh, well, that's what she does. She sings.
Or I'll hold their hand.
I want to know.
A hug.
Yeah, well, I want to know... What is the number one rule before you go out on a call?
Go to the bathroom.
Got it.
Once your tones go off, you go to the bathroom before you go on the call because you'll never know when you have that opportunity
again.
Because it could be that you go on one call and you're coming back and another call comes in. And you have to go into action right there to the next call. Or it could be your call ends up being a lengthy call. You go on standby for a fire,
mm-hmm.
and it could be 3 or 4 hours.
Longer than you expect.
Right. And as we all know, a lot of times when you get up from a sound sleep, you yeah. usually have to go anyway.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Before we go on to the Holly Williams House, is there anything more that you want to add to this section on the ambulance that I haven't covered?
I did think of one other thing.
Good.
The ambulance is like a second family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's made up of all different people, different occupations everybody has, but they all come together when somebody needs the support, the moral support even amongst us. And so we've had a few people where somebody might pass away or has surgery, or we had one individual who was going through a divorce, and all of us would just kind of check in with her. We'd do a big dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granted, a lot of times that's the women of the squad, but everybody brings something, and you just kind of have a woman's night where you're just trying to uplift somebody else.
I got that impression from Jackie when I did her, that it is a family.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's made up of all levels,
yeah.
all socioeconomic, all careers. It's just a big family.
Yeah.
And it's 45 people on the squad
yeah,
now?
Yeah, about that. You kind of check on others, and if somebody's going through a rough time, you just want to make sure that they're not going to be your next call that you have to go to.
Yeah.
And,
and everybody needs support.
Right.
That's wonderful. All right. Holly Williams House.
Holly Williams House.
You worked with Carrie Keyser?
Yes. I did.
Do you know when she came to be director at the Holly Williams House, roughly?
I don't remember.
How long was she there, do you know?
I think she was there 5 or 6 years.
Okay, alrighty. How did you get involved?
I think there was also an ad for a tour. They were looking for tour guides.
Mm-hmm. And this would be when?
Curators. I'm trying to think.
Because I was doing it back in the 70s.
It was around 2000.
That would probably be about right.
Might have been like 1998,
yeah.
2000, around then.
Okay.
So I think it was, my daughter was still in school in the area, so at the Housatonic.
Mm-hmm. So it was something that you could easily do.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Did you
it
get
was
any?
Mostly, it was, a, you know, a, on a weekend, you're doing
yeah.
either Saturday
yeah.
or Sunday.
Did you get any training as a docent?
Carrie had some trainings. She did some trainings, and then they came up with a script, and we had to follow the script.
Oh, because when I was doing it, the first time that I was doing it, it was furniture. You talked about the objects. And then the second time that I came around doing it, and that would be in the 80s, and it was the people. Mm-hmm. You talked about the family. About the people.
She actually came up with a script where we portrayed Mariah Holly Williams, and then we did dress the part, and then we would go over some of the furniture, some of the architecture, and some of the history of the area, and we were also talking a little bit about the women's history at that time.
Yeah.
Which was 1876, and kind of bring in a little bit about the centennial in Philadelphia. So you could kind of incorporate
everything.
A lot of little things. So you could be outside and talk about how Lakeville was back in 1876, meaning no trees. And then you would talk a little bit about the architecture and what it would stand for. And when you walk in the hall and the living room, why the architecture was so
formal, for
formal,
one thing.
Right. And there was so much detail to it. And then as you went to the dining room, there wouldn't be, and kind of talk about the way of life back then, and calling cards, and you would go visit people, and calling cards could mean certain things, and what's expected of certain people.
How long did you do this?
I think I did it 5 years. Carrie left, and I did it 1 year when she wasn't there.
Then the Cannon Museum must have been going then.
The Cannon Museum was going. Lou Bucherri was there for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when I was doing the docent part of it, both in the 70s and the 80s, there was no Cannon Museum. Yes, we used the Carriage House, but it wasn't set up as a separate museum.
Lou was there with the museum. So when we were done with ours, they'd go over there, or they might have done the Cannon Museum, and then they'd come for the tour. So he would bring them over.
Yeah.
And it was just... We just kind of, in
shared
a way,
it.
Giggled because he was more 1700s and I was supposed to portray 1800s. So we're shifting people from the 1700s to the 1800s when they're in 2000.
Okay. So who did the seven-holer, the privy?
Talk about it in my tour.
Okay.
Especially at the end, I would say, make sure you go check out the ice house and the...
Yeah.
Seven-hole outhouse, I would have the best time, especially if children were in the
They love that.
Of saying, and the whole family would go there together because that's where you talk about the servants. And I love watching the mouths drop, or they would giggle, or they turn all red.
Yeah.
And they, indicate, I would never go with my family. And it's like, and you kind of say to them, but that's the way life was then, and that's the only way you knew. And
yeah.
You wouldn't want to talk about the servants in the house because they're all around. And they're like, oh, that's true. And,
yeah, it was privacy.
And, yeah.
It was really the only privacy they had.
Just a different way of life. So it would incorporate the other items on the property and make sure that they went and saw the other ones.
Why did you like working at the Holly Williams house?
I've been interested in history. Even when my daughter was growing up, we would go to all the historical things. And it just... brings me back, it seemed like, to a much quieter and peaceful time.
True.
Maybe it was didn't feel that way to them at their time, but it certainly did to me.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed much more relaxing, and I just enjoyed kind of getting out of character in my life.
Then getting into a
somebody
simpler.
Else's life, yeah.
And you were married at the Holly Williams house.
I was.
And why did you decide you wanted to be married there?
Because during my tour, I would talk about Mariah and coming down this gorgeous staircase they had, and you go into the parlor and get married. And
you thought that was neat.
I just thought it would be, extremely wonderful to walk down this huge staircase.
Did you have a wedding gown that was of the period or not?
No. I did have a modern.
And seeing as how I have the groom here, when she suggested being married at the Holly Williams house, were you a little taken aback, or did you think it was a good idea?
I actually thought it was really neat.
Good.
Just due to the fact that there was another part of history for that house mm-hmm. that hasn't been done in I don't know how many years.
Right.
And being able to be part of that history, although I told her, time's ticking, and when it says we've got all the guests here for
12 o'clock. We're starting right at 12.
We're starting at 12, so you better be picking your way down the stairs.
That's wonderful, though, that you felt it was an important part of the house and the history to do that. And I think that's really nice. It was a wonderful staircase. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to slide mm-hmm. down the banister, but I never got up the courage to do that.
I did, too. But, it's just a real nice staircase.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
The only thing we did that you didn't do in the 1800s is we did get married on a Saturday.
Yes, so you wouldn't.
Typically, you don't get married on a Saturday.
No.
That would have been way too inconvenient. And everybody, all the family, seemed to do fine with having it there.
Oh,
and they were all crowded in the parlor.
Yep. It's rather a small parlor, but
yes,
you managed.
Yes, we did. I'll have to get some pictures.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Anything else you want to say about the Holly Williams house?
I think it's too bad that they had to close it down. It's perfectly understandable.
Yeah.
But there was so much history and so much original things mm-hmm. That it's a
missing piece now.
Yeah, it is a missing piece. It's a definite missing piece. And when I was there, we definitely talked about the contributions that Salisbury did mm-hmm. to the community and to the way life is now.
Oh, yes.
Revolutionary War.
Very definitely.
And even as Mariah was growing up, the differences there, mm-hmm. that it's now kind of lost. I don't think other people in the community know about it.
They don't realize that it had been in the same family for generations and that they kept everything.
Right.
And that in itself was unique.
Yeah.
I mean, the 60,000 letters or however many there were.
Yeah.
And the receipts and the letters that they copied, that they kept. And it was a wealth of information mm-hmm. that unfortunately is no longer available to us.
No. And they did a lot for the community.
Oh, a lot.
I mean, all
sure.
the men that lived there mm-hmm. did quite a bit. Or a few of them moved out of the community and still did quite a bit.
Yeah, but it's a shame that it closed. Yeah. Civic activities other than the ambulance, what else do you do if... anything? Or have you been on boards and that sort of thing?
Right now I'm on the board of the EMS Institute, which does kind of go with the ambulance. Mm-hmm. We do education for EMTs. I went on that because my uncle had started that organization, so I just...
Sort of thought you...
Thought maybe
yeah, you'd
another
better.
Member should be on there. And that's where we do, one of our main focuses is doing the conference, an annual conference at Hotchkiss School for all the EMTs
area. Yeah.
But we invite them all over Connecticut, too. But it's mostly to cover New York and Connecticut so that there was a local place for them to go to conference.
And it's a good central facility.
Yeah. And Hotchkiss has been gracious enough to let us use that during their spring break, so we have a very nice facility.
But you also cover Hotchkiss if there's any kind of medical emergencies.
Yes. One hand washes the other.
Oh, definitely. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Previously to getting involved with the ambulance, I was involved with Women's Support Service. Mm-hmm. And I was a hotline counselor for that, and then was asked to be on the board and was on that board. Was president of the board for a while.
Did you work with Dick Tabor on that?
No, I did not.
Because I just finished with him.
Began. Actually, I was on the board when they started Trade Secrets.
That's impressive.
We had it up at Wake Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the harder part about that is we would have to have people park in the ball field and downtown and shuttle people up because there really wasn't parking up there, but we had that figured out. And I kind of roped Lakeville Fire Department to help with the parking and everything.
Yes.
And then Elaine LaRoche was gracious enough to have it at her place, and I think that happened.
And Bunny Williams had it
year.
For a couple of years, too.
Yes, she had it. She had it, then I think we went to Wake Robin.
And then you went to LaRoche. Elaine LaRoche.
Yeah. So I was on the board I think I was present when it was Went White Robin. Mm-hmm. I helped open buns.
It's an impressive fundraiser,
mm-hmm.
and
it
a
is.
Lot of work goes into that.
It is, yes.
It's a wonderful Quite organization, but it's an awful lot of work to yeah. put that together.
Gardening's not my forte, so.
That
but I definitely knew how much work went into
yeah.
it. I said,
oh, yeah.
Don't ask me about all the plants and gardens and things like that. Just tell me what you need moved where.
Logistics. You're
yes.
good with logistics.
Yes. What can I do to help? So. But at the moment, I'm not with Women's Support Services just due to the fact that I put more commitment
into the
ambulance, and mm-hmm. because of my job,
sure.
I can't really be available to be counselor because you kind of have to be
You
on
have
phone.
To, yeah. Tell me a little bit about the 911 dispatching job that you do.
Answer to the phone, 911 calls for 20 towns. Now, we just took on Torrington a couple of years ago.
And you told me you had a sort of a three-day on, three-day off.
We kind of work, we work 2 days on, then 2 days off, and then we work 3 days over the weekend. We work a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then work, get 2 days off, work 2 days, and then the next weekend we have the Friday, Saturday, Sunday off.
And what are your
so
hours?
We,
I mean, do you do...
We work 12-hour shifts.
You work at...
Six to six.
Six to six.
Yep.
And do you sometimes do the night shift and sometimes the day shift, or?
I'm considered a daytime dispatcher.
Okay.
The company has the right to order me in for an overnight shift. So on, like, my 2 days off, I could be ordered in for that overnight in between. I prefer not to do that mm-hmm. because my body has now adjusted to the
sleeping at night.
Six in the morning to six at night, and it yeah. does do a number on you when you're
sure.
staying up. Because going to work at 6 in the morning means I have to get up at like 4,
mm-hmm.
3:30, 4, depending if
sure.
I'm washing my hair before I go to work.
Uh-huh.
But
oh,
being
yeah.
a closed-in area that people don't see you, it's
mm-hmm.
not like you need mm-hmm. to have your hair prissied up and makeup on. And
yeah, well, still.
But you still need to
be there. Yeah.
Come across on the phone
yeah.
as professional. So a lot of times you want to make sure
you do whatever.
Are yeah. dressed well so that you... portray that over the phone.
Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do
yes,
with it.
Yes. So,
anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to add to this before we close?
I don't think so. I got into dispatching from volunteering in the ambulance,
yep.
which was a total career change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell people if they're taking the EMT class, if you're interested, there are different avenues that you can go to change your jobs or, you know, do something different and go in a different direction in life. And
life is changeable.
It opens up a lot of doors. So sometimes when you volunteer, it will take you a different way, and that's good.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Khaki.
Thank you.